listening Dog Media.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to The Offside Rule. I'm Kate Borsay and alongside me, well, it's one bit of our trio, Hayley McQueen, Sky Sports news anchor, fresh from a traffic jam. Good morning, Hayley.
Oh, crikey. I think that was the first traffic jam I've been in for about 2 years. I did not enjoy that.
What is it with traffic jams?
I'm
back
here.
Again, eh?
God, I know. Didn't enjoy it. And I was just grateful. I wasn't going to the loo before I left the house. I was like, you know, one of those when you have to tell yourself off like a child. Now, have you gone to the toilet? So at least I did that because I could have been in serious trouble otherwise.
Yes. Well, listen, thank goodness you are ready and raring to go. Joining us, Lindsay Hooper, as we heard in last week's show, big exclusive, is getting married today. I've sent her my best, sent off a bottle of perfume and a card so that she smells nice. And joining us instead, it's our super sub, a great person, the perfect person to have alongside us, sports broadcaster Ali Bender. Hi, Ali.
Morning. Hi. Oh, that's so lovely. You sent us some perfume. Oh,
yeah. Well,
I've just asked for some pictures. So can't wait to see the pics. Really exciting.
We're all very excited and very clucky about that. How are you, Ali? Listen, I need to chat to you briefly about this wonderful website that you've set up for free to help people who want to get into sports reporting. I can't believe you've done it for free because we're all going to be sending people there as well who ask us for advice. So you should have cottoned on to that. But just tell us a little bit about it.
Oh my goodness. It's a bit of a labour of love. So I sort of It was born out of the idea that basically so many people message me and say, you know, I love your job. It's so exciting. How do I get into it? And I was spending quite a bit of time messaging people back. And suddenly I thought, I'm telling everyone the same advice. I'm going to set up, I'm going to write an ebook and I'm going to send it out. And it's kind of got longer and longer and more people have asked me different questions and I've kind of branched out. And I'm actually thinking now I'm probably going to do a course because there's just so much. And I think, you know, all our friends in the industry that we know, we can draw on so much information. But it's taken up so much of my time. I'm actually thinking I really should have charged for this now because it's taken
yes,
weeks.
You should.
But it's too late. It's too late. I've told people it's free.
Maybe the course. You can charge a zillion pounds for each. No, you can't.
But it's been fun. You know what, Kate? It's really interesting to sit down and to think about all the things that we've picked up on the way. You forget even the simple. I mentor a couple of girls and, you know, I've told them a couple of things that I think is really, really simple. And they're like, wow. And you forget, because we've been doing this for so long, stuff that's second nature to all of us is really important information to someone else. And so it just kind of feels like the right time to be sharing it now. And you know, my career hopefully is far from over, but I'm sort of going into different things. I'm doing quite a lot of content creation on TikTok now, believe it or not. So it sort of feels like I'm diverting a bit.
I mean, Hayley and I aren't on TikTok. Mm. Or like I still...
No.
TikTok a lot. Yes, we should be. I mean, Ali, just very briefly tell us your TikTok tale. Goodness me.
I mean, because
you've got an insane number of followers and it happened really, really quickly, didn't it?
It happened so fast. So basically, I was trying just to get 10,000 followers on Instagram so that I could have my swipe up because I can't believe it. I just have hardly any followers on Instagram and I put so much content out there. I just didn't really understand. It felt like it was broken. And so someone actually said to me, listen, join TikTok. It's fast growing. It's incredibly organic. People love the content. And I thought, it's not for me. I'm over 40. I don't sing and dance. But I went into it. I looked into it. It's actually really, it's really intuitive. It has great editing potential. And within 8 months, I got 125,000 followers. And a lot of the followers came across and followed me on Instagram. So it did the trick there. I can now swipe up. And so, but in the process, I've fallen in love with TikTok and I've decided it's the best platform for me. It's friendlier. No one ever comments about how you look. It's always about your content. And they always thank you for it, which is so rare. So I'm a complete convert to TikTok.
Oh. It's a fascinating story, actually, and something I hadn't thought of a lot. Back to your idea about spreading the word and helping to educate young reporters getting into football. I'm sure that there are females doing that out there across unis and maybe some other courses, but I can't think of anyone. So actually, to be able to go to a female and say, how did you get into your job, particularly sports reporting, I think is kind of hugely important. So plaudits to you, Ali. A big, big virtual round of applause from everyone at the Offside Rule for that. Listen, England were back in action, weren't they? Over the last week, we saw the best of our international offering with a great win over Andorra and a pretty contentious draw against Hungary. The Premier League returns this weekend as well. That will no doubt spring up lots of talking points. But coming up on the show, we're going to take a little focus in on qualification for Qatar 2022. Germany and Denmark are there already, so is Qatar, of course. But we'll be discussing what other teams are likely to book a space on the plane and which ones might miss out if there's going to be a shock exit, do we think, from this qualification. We're going to be discussing how Newcastle might spend their newfound swag and deciding which footballers are going to direct which films. This has been inspired by a footballer who's decided to create his own film, basically. Hans Thor Halldorsen. He's co-written his first feature film, Cop Secret. It may astound you or please you to know it's an Icelandic LGBTQ plus action comedy, which premiered at the BFI Film Festival recently. There we go. We'll find out more about that a little bit later on in the show. First, though, let's look at what teams are heading or maybe not heading to the World Cup in Qatar. All right, so who can start block booking the hotels and the plane seats? Germany and Denmark is the answer. So can Qatar, but they don't need to go anywhere, do they? So three teams in total have qualified for the 2022 World Cup. Who else is going to join them there? There's a maximum of three games left for European teams in qualifying. I'd like to know, ladies, which teams might miss out? How about the home nations? Let's do a little round robin on their chances of qualifying. I'll just give you the lowdown on what happens. So 13 slots in the tournament are available for UEFA teams, so European teams. The winners of the 10 groups, so they'll automatically go through. So that's 10 of 13 places gone. The remaining three places, well, they'll be fought out between the 10 group runners up from this qualifying stage and the two highest ranked teams from the Nations League who've not already qualified or finished in a runners up spot. Okay. Do you get that? I hope it's all clear.
You did it well. You did it well.
Good, good, jolly good. So I'd like to know, if we take a little whiz through the groups, or maybe we want to start with the home nations first. Who looks good? Who doesn't look so good? Ali is our special guest. Do you want to get us started?
Yeah, I'll get us started. Although I definitely think I'll leave Scotland for Hayley because she is Scottish. So I think that's only fair. but they're looking pretty good at the moment. I was impressed to see Lyndon Dykes score once again. But yeah, I mean, England, a bit disappointing, isn't it? I mean, they're still 4 points away from guaranteeing top spot. So, you know, I do believe they'll be there, but I was kind of hoping to see two really big victories. I think the last game was really disappointing. I think Gareth Southgate against Hungary obviously talked about how it was just one of those kind of bad days in the office. And I don't know about you girls, but it really feels like this particular international break has really dragged. I don't know. I suppose it depends if you work in international football. And over the past, I have. But this time, I'm just in Premier League. So it's been a huge countdown.
Yeah, because we're in a quite an exciting point in the Premier League season where all the teams have sort of settled in and it's starting to get really tasty, isn't it? We're starting to see teams get into their stride or not. And so it does feel like a bit of an interruption.
It does. It really did feel that way. And I think, you know, obviously I've sort of just been keeping an eye on the home nations and, you know, Northern Ireland can't qualify now. Really disappointing game against Bulgaria because there was a huge fight back from there. And it saw Neil Lennon call them absolutely abysmal. Ian Barraclough has basically said they need to just give their fans something to be proud about, even though they can't qualify anymore in their last remaining games. Because that's the thing, I think that's all that fans want to see. They want to see passion. They want to see the players having a go. And Northern Ireland's collapse would have been really, really disappointing for any Northern Ireland fans watching that game.
I'll bring Wales into the discussion as we've been talking about the home nations. And in fact, they're in Group E, aren't they? And I guess if you look at the whole of Europe, actually, the only team with a bit of breathing space, other than those who've qualified, is probably Belgium. They're 5 points clear at the top of Group E. So it looks really pretty nailed on for them. But it's this battle for second place that remains the most contentious point in Group E. Currently, the Czech Republic are there. They're in that runners-up position, though they've played a game more than Wales, who are in third. So that perhaps means advantage Wales when you think about that game. They next play at home to Belarus November the 13th, but their final outing is against Belgium. So it could all come down to this. And that could be a major spanner in the works, unless, of course, Belgium are through and they're quite happy to just have a fun day out. So that's where it gets tricky for Wales as well. It may come down to goal difference, mightn't it? Wales are too shy of the Czech Republic at the moment. So that means, I guess, if they're looking at this Belarus fixture, goals are really important. A high scoring game in Wales's favour could be really important for them there.
So only second place will do for Scotland. They're currently in second place. I'll get to that in a minute. So we know that 10 runners up and World Cup qualifying will go through to the playoffs. So the best six are seeded depending on their results in the group stage. So Scotland are among those. Okay. So two Nations League section winners. So two winners of the Nations League who finished third or below in World Cup qualifying will then join. So that's Wales and Austria who currently have those two top spots. So actually Wales have a bit more an advantage over Scotland, even though Scotland look like they're doing much better in their Group F. Now, Denmark did them a favour because they've already qualified. So that's great. It's between Scotland and Israel. And of course, Scotland have already beaten Israel. And they're the only team that can move Scotland off the top. So we can forget about Austria, forget about the Faroe Islands, and forget about Moldova. I want to forget about the Faroe Islands as well, because I thought Scotland were going to sweep them aside and we were going to grab a whole cluster of goals. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. It was a bit lackluster. I thought Scotland were going to, you know, massively, massively get confidence and power on through following such a brilliant display against Israel, who they've faced so many times before. It's like Scotland against Israel in every major tournament. And now it's between Scotland and Israel. Now, they have to go to Moldova, okay? They might be bottom of the group, but it was in 2004, Scotland drew with Moldova. It's one of their worst results ever. And it was actually the end of Bertie Vokes's reign as Scotland manager. So they'll be hoping that they don't have a repeat of past games against Moldova. But I really just have a funny feeling that Scotland are going to do it. And how incredible would that be to qualify for back-to-back major tournaments for the first time in what seems like about 1,000 years.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, as Ali just mentioned, we've got players like Lyndon Dykes, who's just absolutely on fire, and a really, really solid team at the moment. And there's a real togetherness and there's a real wanting to play for their country, which I think was lacking not too long ago. You go back 10 years and there were so many players pulling out of internationals and friendlies. That doesn't seem to be happening at the moment. So I think they've got the momentum there.
Okay. Any teams that we think are surefire nailed on to get through, or that we're a bit concerned about? Anything for you, Ali?
I just wanted to mention, and also just going back to Scotland, it was lovely to see Billy Gilmore. He had a few opportunities, actually. He was a bit unlucky, but just to see him back in the action, because remember, he got COVID during the Euros.
Yes,
I felt desperately sorry for him. I wanted to talk about Portugal in Group A and Cristiano Ronaldo, who, you know, I know there's been a lot of talk about him in the Premier League, obviously 36 years old, but he scored another hat-trick over the international break against Luxembourg. I mean, a couple of penalties, one goal from open play as well. But just to think about how many, that's 10 international hat-tricks, 28 hat-tricks overall, and 25 goals in his last 16 World Cup qualifiers. So that's just absolutely ridiculous from Ronaldo. That we time after time, he just does something else on the football pitch that just
goes
leaves
over
us,
and above.
You know, exactly. but yeah, we should see Portugal, of course, winners of Euro 2016 qualify quite comfortably. It looks like they're going to be first or second, 10 points above Luxembourg in third with two games to play.
The whole point about this qualification, of course, is finishing in second is far from securing a place at the World Cup in 2022, isn't it? So it's just high stakes, really. You really need to win that group to be assured. And then it comes down to a bit of an S show, if you see what I mean, because there are only three places available from those runner-up spots and, of course, the Nations League spots as well. So it could get really tricky for someone like Portugal still, arguably. And I'm going to say the same thing about Italy, actually. 2020 Euro champions, of course. Two games remaining. They're on level points with Switzerland, who are in that runners-up place at the moment, who are behind just on goal difference. So both sides 1-4, drawn two of their six fixtures. I suppose the good news for both sides is that neither can finish below second. Bulgaria are too far behind for that. But it's all going to come down to an encounter between Italy and Switzerland when they meet on November the 12th. A win for Italy will basically transport them through. And otherwise, it just gets tricky. So there are still quite high stakes for a lot of teams here. We're still at that really interesting point in qualification where in the next game or two, one of the major teams is not going to qualify. Going to wrap it up there and move on to topic two. Hey, big spender. Okay, so Newcastle have become the wealthiest club in football after being taken over by a consortium led by the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. Fans are getting very excited, some would say carried away, about who they could buy in the January transfer window and beyond. I'd like to look at who might get the nod as new manager. It's widely presumed that Steve Bruce won't be in the job for a whole lot longer. So who are Newcastle going to dip into their deep pockets and purchase? Ali, anyone that you have your eye on?
Yeah, I just want to start off by saying I feel really sad for Steve Bruce. I mean, 999 games, by the way. So if he's not in charge for the game against Tottenham, one short of that 1,000, you almost think, is there somewhere in his heart, in their hearts, that they could just give him that one game? I mean,
but then
do you not
think he's better to have his 1,000th game as a manager at a club, at kind of a brand new
who
club?
Love him. Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe unless he decides he's going to retire, although I do expect to see him pop up somewhere else, to be honest with you. But it sounds to me from everything that I'm hearing that it's going to be the assistant manager and caretaker charge for Tottenham. And then obviously they're on the hunt with names like Frank Lampard, Gerrard, Favre, Conte. I actually think Conte is probably the best fit, but he wants assurances that he's going to have full control over that spending. And it looks like they've got about almost 200 million to spend on players.
Yes,
but we've got to remember, 190 million and no Champions League football yet. So I think it's going to be one of those kind of building processes. But then, I suppose the big club that kind of stood out to me is Barcelona, because they are a club in a little bit of crisis, a little bit not just where they were or where we've seen them for the last decade or so. And so there's a few Barcelona players that have kind of been linked, like Ousmane Dembele could be tempted, or Sergi Roberto. But, you know, once again, I think a lot of Newcastle fans are getting very carried away about who they might be able to get. And often this is a sort of a long building process, which might take a couple of seasons. And we're not going to see them all just appear in January, I don't think.
Yeah, that £190 million, by the way, that's the amount that they're allowed to spend without falling foul of financial fair play rules. Yeah, someone very clever did a calculation, so fair play to them. I haven't got their name down, but thank you for that. a lot more brainy than I am at this time in the morning. But it's interesting because that figure's come about slightly because Mike Ashley has been so prudent. So there you go. He has left with one positive legacy. Just to continue the chat about managers briefly. I mean, a lot of people asking why they would get rid of Steve Bruce and not have someone lined up already, and that would just be a bit of a silly thing to do. But you have to wonder, I mean, yeah, you have to feel sorry for Steve Bruce in this kind of no man's land position. Someone else who Sky Italy have been tracking on this, reports coming out of Sky Italy that Brendan Rodgers is Newcastle's primary target to succeed Bruce. Apparently the new owners would have to pay 16 million euros, so 13.5 million pounds. That's what Leicester would need to buy Rodgers out of his current contract. Would Brendan Rodgers be a big enough name, if you see what I mean, on the world stage to satisfy the ambition that the owners of Newcastle, the new owners of Newcastle clearly have, do you think, Hayley?
I personally don't think so, no. I'd seen Eddie Howlett and Chris Wilder as well, but perhaps that was before they took over when they were thinking of maybe getting rid of Bruce. I think they're looking at a big name. I know, obviously, I would say Steven Gerrard is a bigger name in terms of what Brendan Rodgers has to offer is far greater
achieved,
in terms of
though?
Management. Mm. No, not in terms of what he's achieved, but in terms of like the glitz and the glamour. But if he fancies a new challenge, he's going to be Liverpool manager one day. But I think not quite yet. I don't think it's going to be any British managers. I think they're going to go for somebody foreign. I think it's going to be a much bigger name. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Roberto Martinez. But then again, is he going to leave a national team ahead of a World Cup, which isn't too far away? But has he achieved so much at Belgium that maybe he doesn't really need to stick out? He can just leave
them
to go and do
it. It's also about who is available, isn't it, though, Hayley? So they might go for perhaps an out-of-work kind of middle name whilst they sort themselves out. And also, Ali, if you're a big name manager like that, you might just want to see how things pan out for a month or two, just try and get the lay of the land with the PIF, with the Saudi PIF, because no one quite knows. We all think it's, well, we all know that there's going to be a lot of money flying around, but we don't really know how it's all going to work yet, do we?
There's a lot of politics surrounding the club. I think you need a manager and a man who is willing to take that on board as well. We've seen, you know, in the same way that Gareth Southgate has had to deal with so much in his tenure as England manager. But yeah, Lucien Favre has been linked as well. And one of the reasons they say that he would be a good manager, and I think they're looking at managers that are known to develop young talent as well. Newcastle have a really great pool of young talent to develop, as well as obviously bringing in some that they already have. I agree. I really can't see Frank Lampard there. And I'm starting to worry for Lampard because the more and more time he spends out of the Premier League, it's going to be very, very difficult for him to get another Premier League job. And I know he's done the Derby thing and, you know, gone to a Championship side hoping to take them up. And it looks like that might be a situation that is all he's left with, because it is very difficult. The jobs are few and far between. But again, I wouldn't put someone like Lampard in a position like this. It's a huge club, a lot of politics.
You need
an
experienced manager,
I think,
don't you? An experienced manager who is used to saving clubs. They are second from bottom in the Premier League. Let's not forget this as well. Yeah. They're in a perilous position. These owners aren't going to want to be owning a club in the Championship. They don't see Newcastle United in the Championship. They need a big name to do big things. I think Favre, as you just mentioned there, Ali, would be a great choice. He was linked with Crystal Palace as well, wasn't he? But
yeah,
I think it will give Newcastle fans that entertaining football that they really want to see. Not just a big name and a few big players coming in, but some entertainment.
Yeah. Well, the situation gets even more kid in a sweetie shop, doesn't it, when you think about the players that they might want to recruit?
Yeah.
We've mentioned sort of a few in passing, but I wonder if they're going to want to make a big marquee English signing or a signing from the Premier League, as well as raiding clubs like Barcelona, as you suggest, Ali. Of course, there's been loads of names flying around, you know, surprise, surprise, or rather no surprise at all. Names like Harry Kane and Paul Pogba. Is that a realistic option, do you think, Ali?
I mean, I'm a Chelsea fan, and, you know, if someone had told me years ago when I started following Chelsea as a young girl that, you know, Abramovich was going to come in and suddenly buy all these big players and we were going to win Champions Leagues, I probably wouldn't have believed it. But, I mean, I don't see why not, although you know, players like Pogba, I'm sorry, but I don't believe that he would want to play for a club without Champions League football. So that's, as I was saying, I just think that, and similarly, Harry Kane, I think it's a building process. And I don't believe you'd see players like that straight away, to be honest with you. I think some of the other names, like, you know, Ajax's goalkeeper Onana has been suggested because neither Dubravka or Carlo are sort of holding down that number one at the moment. Someone like him, and if you get in players like that from January and suddenly start building decent players who are playing good football, attractive football, then in turn that will obviously attract other, you know, other players like the Paul Pogbas. But I can't see that straight away, if I'm honest.
Hayley, what about you? Which players have you got lined up for Newcastle?
Yeah, I actually don't think Philippe Coutinho would be a bad shout, because since his move to Barca and then his loan subsequently to Bayern Munich, I mean, he's not really hit the heights that we saw him reach when he was in the Premier League. He might want to come back, cut it here. I think it could reignite his career. Apparently, Barca would want around £50 million for him. But it is believed, according to a Spanish paper, that his representatives have already held talks with Newcastle, as has Kalidou Koulibaly's agent as well. Apparently, he could be, according to a Football Insider reporting in France, that he will be their marquee signing in January. Napoli had actually previously put him up for £80 million. He said, £80 million. He's 30 years old, however, but I think his valuation will have dropped considerably. They'll be wanting to get him off their wage bill. And I think he could be heading there as a centre-back. You just wonder how much money is going to
it's
be able to influence.
It's just fitting it all in together, isn't it, really? And also sort of whether a player like Jesse Lingard, whose, you know, contract comes to an end at the end of the season at United, we know he's not happy there. He wants first-team football. And actually Manchester United will be keen to try and offload him in January for a fee rather than on a free at the end of the season. So could sort of he be an option? Or is that just, you know, putting a square peg in a round hole situation? I think
that option. I mean, yeah, I think that's great. I watched, obviously, I kind of felt desperately sorry for Jesse Lingard because, you know, he goes to West Ham and he's an absolute hero there. And suddenly his football is improving. And, you know, we see this so often with the psychology, you know, the love of a manager, the opportunity can just do so much for a footballer. And then, you know, the fact that he's then not allowed to leave to go to West Ham. And then he scores for United against West Ham and doesn't quite know what to do with this celebration. I would love to see him in a place where he can really thrive. The fans adore him. And then he can get on with playing the decent football that we know that he can play. So I think those are the kind of signings that we might actually start seeing, that type of thing. But it'd be really exciting to see sort of how this pans out.
Yeah. And try not to upset the players that are there as well, just bringing in a ton of names and just, like, you know, booting them out of their position. So that's going to be interesting to see that dynamic.
Yeah, I think there are mixed emotions about this deal, I think. And I'm definitely sitting on the cautious side of the fence, but a lot will be decided as we see how things play out over the next months and years, I guess. All right, let's move on to our final topic. Lights, camera, action. Now, this topic has been inspired by the Icelandic goalkeeper Hannes Thor Halldórsson. Apologies if I have pronounced that incorrectly. He's only gone and made a film, but that's not all, actually, his story is about. We like footballers with stories, don't we? He quit football in his early 20s, then he came back, made his international debut at 28, was part of the team, actually, that beat England at Euro 2016 and saved a penalty from Lionel Messi in Iceland's first ever game at a World Cup. Now he's only gone and directed his own feature film. It's called Cop Secret. It's an Icelandic LGBTQ+ action comedy, and it's received international recognition by being premiered at the BFI Film Festival in London recently. Well done to him. So that's got us thinking about other footballers that you would imagine directing films and what sort of movie they would direct. Ali, what have you got?
Don't get me started. So when you do these quirky things, my brain goes crazy. I love them. And I find myself, I'm doing like the school run with my kids and like they're chatting to me about school and my brain is going, thinking about this. Because basically, football and film are my two favourite things. So I got a few, but I'll just start with a couple. So I'm a massive anime fan. I love like Studio Ghibli.
My daughter loves anime. And
oh, really?
It's completely foreign to me, Ali. So I'll have to get some sort of hack session from you because I'm out of my depth at the moment.
Oh,
with my
I love it. You know, I've got some great recommendations actually of something you can watch with her that you'll really love as well, like really short little things as well on Netflix.
Okay.
So anyway, Miyazaki, who's done, you know, Spirited Away and My Neighbor Totoro and all of those ones. So I think the best footballer to direct those kind of films would be Sergio Aguero. Because I don't know if you know, but his nickname Kun Aguero comes out of the fact that his teammates thought that he looked like an anime character. So I thought
really?
that was a really good fit. And I'll give you another one before I let someone else have a go. But Quentin Tarantino, because I love Quentin Tarantino and Kill Bill and Pulp Fiction are my favourite films. You know, I was thinking who would be great for the kind of the blood and the gore and the Wild West theme. And then I thought, of course, it can only be Zlatan because isn't he a black belt in karate? So he'd be absolutely brilliant directing those scenes. So, I'd like to. Or someone like Sergio Ramos, who loves to pick up a red card.
Yes.
I think he'd be a good film director for sure.
I was having a bit of a moment with myself earlier when I was thinking about footballers and films, remembering Stan Collymore and Basic Instinct 2. And then I had to move on quite quickly from that thought. If Ronaldo directed a film, we've sort of touched on this already. What would the film be about? It would be about him, of course. no surprises there.
I was thinking with Ronaldo. I mean, we're looking for a new James Bond, aren't we? So he probably quite fancies his chances, to be honest.
Yeah, do you think, I don't know whether he fits my brief of the ideal James Bond.
But he would think he does.
Yeah,
he doesn't.
Yes, exactly. Good point. Good point indeed. Timo Werner, he's been quite unlucky, hasn't he? Not a great record in the Premier League as it stands. I felt even worse for him, actually. He thought he'd added one to his tally, didn't he? When he was playing against Southampton last weekend, was it? But it was ruled out, which I just thought, I've given him a film title, actually, rather than a type of film. But I just thought he could just be Mr. Unlucky, you know, a tale of a guy whose chips are down. Maybe there's a happy ending in there in sight for Timo Werner.
He could be part of those, you know, those kind of Ken Loach style movies, like The Struggle of the Working Class People, like I, Daniel Blake. And he could sort of end up being...
I'm not
actually
sure
Marcus
he fits
Rashford,
into Struggle of the Working Class People, does he?
Someone will know, but I think if the fact that he's had like a really hard time and he's always offside and then suddenly he's going to score in a World Cup final, I think, you know, that type of film. Or maybe Marcus Rashford would be a good director for that type of film because obviously all the work that he's been doing sort of in politics and with the kid, feeding, you know, kids and that kind of thing.
Mine's all kind of superheroes, really. My other half is massively into Marvel. He's currently got me watching every single thing through the whole like Marvel catalogue just so that we can watch this new series called Loki. He's like, I can't watch Loki until you've seen
Avengers,
Loki's
Captain
America,
brother of someone,
Thor.
Isn't he? Something like that. Loki's the brother.
Yeah,
of...
the brother of Thor, the half-brother, yes.
Yeah.
It's all... a bit much for me, but anyway, we've just been introduced to Spider-Man, and obviously with great power comes great responsibility. So you'd mentioned Marcus Rashford, Ali, and I thought, you know, there's no youngster facing greater responsibility than football's own Peter Parker, so I had him down as that. Now we're just watching the Hulk at the moment, so you could have Cristiano Ronaldo playing the Hulk, but do you remember Diego Costa? He actually looks a lot like Eric Banner. He really, really does. Absolutely. And we know that Jesse Lingard celebrates with Paul Pogba Black Panther style. So Black Panther and Shuri. So you've got Pogba and Jesse Lingard. I have them down there. As for Thor himself, I was struggling with this one a little bit.
Cavani?
Because it's the Chris Hemsworth character, and he's quite dashing and handsome, but I'm struggling with this one, but I didn't know if you guys could come up with anything to help me out, because my other half is just not even into football one single bit. So when I was saying to him last night, right, let's think of superheroes and footballers, he just looked at me like, what do you mean? So, thanks.
If you've got any suggestions, by the way, listeners, send them in, please, to at Offside Rule Pod, and Hayley will be the judge of them, I think.
I do have a couple of more like actual stories linking stuff just really quickly. I actually just want to mention a player that we've talked about before, and we've talked about the story before, Kate. And it's about Rose Riley, very, very famous female footballer. She had a great natural talent. She played for a local boys club, but only if she called herself Ross. She, in the 1970s, there was nowhere for her to be a professional footballer. She's Scottish. She was 17 years old and went to Europe to follow her dream. Imagine that, 1970s, female, moving to Italy. She was such a hit in Serie A. She was actually asked by the country's president to play for the Italian national team. And she won the 1984 version of the World Cup. She was actually female footballer of the year as well. So she was a household name in her adopted homeland. And they're making a film honouring her as, nice. As a trailblazer. So that's pretty cool. So I found that in The Scotsman. I also found a footballer who's now written his 10th book. Two of them have been made into short films. A former footballer who played for Stamford AFC, and he's got such an incredible story. I won't bore you with the whole thing and take you through all 10 books, but Play Like Your Football Heroes is the fourth book released just this year. Yeah, he's been taken up by a major publisher. Now, crazy, his literary career began with a bang. His debut book, The Boy in Brazil, was shortlisted for Football Book of the Year in 2016 when he was still playing. He was actually a professional footballer playing out in Brazil. He's from England and he played for Stamford, played out in America as well, of course. He's from Barnack. He was invited to go and play, listen to this, overseas, for Pro Soccer Odyssey in Sri Lanka. You're like, what the hell is that? okay. But two international cricket stars own a football club. I had absolutely no idea.
Yeah. That is a meeting of minds, isn't it?
Two of the biggest crickets, Kumar Sangakkara and Mahela Jayawardena. So they basically told him he had to come to Sri Lanka. It had been very, you know, badly affected by civil war. He was playing with guys who'd been soldiers and basically wrote a book about that. So why not? That's there we go. Wow. I just thought I'd mention him because I just found that I found a football book that had been made into a film and then found out a footballer had written it and actually had 10 published. So well done. Well done to, what's his name again here? It's Seth something or other.
There we go. If you're going to give him credit, give him his last name as well.
There you go. The famous Seth something or other.
I had an idea for Thor, actually. I don't know what you think about Soyuncu, the Leicester player, because he's got that long flowing hair. Yeah. I actually also think Timo Werner has a little, if he grew his hair, he has a bit of a Thor
shades
look about
of that.
Him.
You know? That's true. That is true.
But we also, I was also thinking about sort of Spielberg or James Cameron, because they always do the big blockbuster films, don't they? So you need a big blockbuster footballer. So I suppose, are we going to say Ronaldo again? Or maybe I'll give him Messi this one. Yeah, Messi could direct that kind of a film. Big blockbuster. Everyone would come and watch.
Big blockbuster. Yeah, exactly. Everything pinning on it. All right, let's finish up there. Time for Any Other Business. So as we know, this is the section where we get to talk about football stories that might have gone under the radar over the last 7 days or so. I'm going to start you both off with a Twitter spat in League One between Portsmouth and Morecambe. Why is that? Well, they both got a player up for League One Goal of the Month for September. Cole Stockton for the Shrimps and for Portsmouth, Ronan Curtis. What did Morecambe decide to do to try and gain some votes, some of the public votes? They sent a tweet out and added Southampton, of course, Portsmouth's great rivals, in on the tweet. They basically said, at Southampton FC, I don't know if you've seen, but any chance of a hand? Quite a low blow, I think. How do you get your player more votes? You target the team of one of the rival nominees. Portsmouth posted back, this is quite harsh, by the way, what a sad little life, Shrimps official, they said. And Morecambe hit back with a fishing gif accompanied with the words, at Pompey, game, set and match. We'll have to take a look at the voting to see how that played out. But there we go, a war of words over Twitter, all based around the League One Player of the Month. Ali.
Yeah, I love that when the admins go at war with one another. It's one of my favourite things. I get so excited about it. So I saw a story that I thought was really nice, actually. This is Helen Nkwocha, who is an English football coach. And I love that. I do love it when people talk about their sacrifice to do something they really want to do. And she always wanted to be a professional football coach. And so she actually lived on a houseboat to fund her dream. And she is the first female to be coaching a male football team, which is absolutely brilliant. I mean, loads of people are up in arms about this kind of thing. And I just think, why not? And it's got to start happening.
Is she doing it in the Faroe Islands, is it? Yes.
Yeah, so this is in the Faroe Islands. And I mean, am I going to try and pronounce the name of the club? Go on then. Tvøroyrar Boldfelag. I don't know much about the Faroe Islands, but she says it's absolutely beautiful. Possibly one of the most beautiful places she's ever seen. It's like living in a fairy tale, she says. It's only got population, the whole of the Faroe Islands, of like 2,000. So she's gone out there in this tiny little place, and she coaches the youth team, the kindergarten as well. But fair play to her. And I just think this is a brilliant story. And, you know, she's a London-born former police officer, basically living her dream.
Okay, I love this one. And this was actually helped by you, wasn't it, Kate? I've got a couple of any other business, but this absolutely wipes the floor with it. Why did Sir Alex Ferguson always chew gum?
Sounds like a bad joke, doesn't it? Anyway, go on.
Former physio Jim McGregor told him he should try and chew gum on his advice. He's done it ever since because he used to have a bit of a nervous cough. When he was asked about chewing his gum, he said, oh, it's just something that I do. But McGregor said, you know, he started chewing gum during the days on my advice. He said the coughing would start during the match. So after time, I plucked up the courage to suggest he should try some chewing gum. What do I chew gum for? He reported. And Jim said, you know, he did used to spit as well. He just thought, well, I thought chewing gum would kill two birds with one stone. He accepted the chewing gum. And that just became a thing that he did during future matches. He said he was never without gum.
Who knew? I wonder what Sir Alex would say about that now.
Don't know.
Love that story. I don't know if you girls have heard about this, but I can't believe I hadn't heard about this, but there's a footballing app called Tonza, and it was founded in 2014, so it's been going a really, really long time. And basically, the idea behind it is it's to kind of help all the young footballers who dream of being a footballer, but they go through the net for whatever reason. So they talk about players like Jamie Vardy, who obviously ends up going all the way through the football leagues before he was kind of really discovered. And what you do is you put yourself on this app, you upload all your stats and your data and videos, and then basically other footballers kind of rate you. And even Haaland used to be on this, by the way, when he was like in Norway's third tier, so just hoping to be discovered. And what you do is if you're good enough, you end up playing for Tonza United, who's the sort of the club of this app. And the reason why this was in the news recently is because Tonza United actually ended up either beating or drawing with Paris Saint-Germain. So it's crazy to think. Yeah. So like, you know, a real proper football team, you know, who play Champions League football, and this, you know, data-driven, app-based team are basically, you know, a match for them. But I just think it's a brilliant story.
Yeah, it is. I just want to give a quick plug to Mina Rizzucchi, someone that we know very well, Italian football expert, done this podcast many, many times. She is part of a Netflix programme that I've been enjoying called Bad Sport. There's a different sport in each episode. It's available now to watch, but I'll give it a quick plug. Now, Mina is in the programme about the Italian match-fixing scandal. It was actually referee-fixing, really, all centred around Juventus and their sporting director, Moggi, and how by hook or by crook, he got the referees to sort of start swaying games in their favour. It was a big scandal at the time. I'm sure we all remember it. Juventus was stripped of the 04-05 title a couple of years later when it all went to court. But Mina's brilliant in it, and it's really fascinating, actually. Not just the football one, but it's really fascinating to go back through these really big moments in sport, albeit not great moments, and get the kind of story behind the story, if you see what I mean. So well done to Mina for that.
Yeah, that's super cool. I'm definitely going to watch that. Always looking out for new things to watch on Netflix that's not superhero film. mine's new software in the battle to help with dementia. And Manchester United have been using VR. So it's software. Female footballers who are apparently at greater risk of dementia than men have basically been using virtual reality headset to practice heading the ball instead of actually heading the ball. So virtual reality could become the future of professional football. So yeah, Premier League and Women's Super League clubs are using the new software, and they're practicing headers in order to obviously reduce the long-term risk. It looks like it's quite a lot of fun as well. So you just never, I don't know how much you're going to be able to practice on this, but heading seems like a pretty good one. So well done. Well done on the software.
Oh, well, that is absolutely fascinating and can only be a good thing, really. All right, ladies, we will leave it there. Time for us to say goodbye, but not before we tell you listeners how you can reach us. You can find us at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and on Insta, and your suggestions for Thor are most welcome. You can also find us via our website too if you want to read some brilliant content, offsiderulepodcast.com. Laura Lawrence, never shy of giving her opinion, has written a piece on Saudi Arabia's Newcastle takeover, saying sports washing is the tip of the iceberg in Premier League hypocrisy. So you can see what she thinks. You can read all about it on offsiderulepodcast.com. Tell me what you've both got coming up. Ali, are you off anywhere exciting?
Yeah, I can't wait because the Premier League is back. So I'm reporting at Leicester against Manchester United. So after that Ronaldo hat-trick, it'll be interesting to see whether Ole starts him or starts him on the bench for this next game. Ooh. Because obviously he got so much criticism. Even Sir Alex raised an eyebrow, didn't he?
Hayley, what about you? Heading back to the studio anytime soon?
Yeah, I was just trying to work out what the day is, what the date is. Anyway, just in the studio as per normal, which is what I'm quite enjoying doing at the moment. But I'm hoping to actually start to get out and watch some football, like in person, real life football. Because I worked out, it's been 4 years since I went to a game, which is just weird because I didn't go when I was pregnant. Wow. And then I had the little one and then we've had pandemic. So that's, nearly 4 years since I've been to an actual match. But I've got a wedding at the weekend. And if people are listening thinking, I thought you guys were really good friends with Lindsay, why are you not at her wedding? Well, we're going to be, aren't we? But this is this is the registry of the wedding.
Yes.
So she's just with her close family going through this today. So I'm feeling quite emotional about
it. I know, congratulations
this morning.
Congrats from all of us. Speaking about going to the football, in a couple of weeks, I think I'm going to go to Chelsea and watch Southampton. So if you're there, Ellie, I will come and say hello to you. I'm just waiting on a ticket. But very exciting. I'm not with you next week because I'm away, so I shall update you fully when I am back on the pod. You've got Lindsay and Hayley and a mystery guest. I wonder who it'll be next week.
Mystery. It's a mystery.
Ali Bender, thank you so much. Tell us where we can find you, Ali, particularly if anyone's interested to hear about this advice that you are giving out for young reporters.
Yeah, so my social media handles are all the same everywhere. So it's at Ali Bender TV, so just Ali, A-L-I. And if you want to get my free ebook, advice about how to get into the industry, you go to my website, which is alisonbender.com, and subscribe. But if you go to any of my social media, you'll see it all there. So come and say hi. And even if you're already in the media and you just might benefit from some of the tips, because like I said, I'm reaching out to a lot of my friends and they've got some great tips on all kinds of things.
Brilliant. Well done for that.
Well done.
I'll be heading over there, no doubt, Ellie. How do I do a voiceover? No. Thank you for joining us, listeners. We will catch you again soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Offside Rule, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Offside at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Offside Rule is a Muddy Knees Media production.
The Athletic.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.